This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
The rules of today's job search. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
In this current period known as the Great Resignation, workers are quitting in record numbers. Hear how to leave a bad job for a better one.
On the tech front, what it would mean for residents to have a smart city, how much it would cost, and how long it would take to create one.
On the travel front, hotel regulars are complaining about the lack of perks like free breakfast, even though they're being advertised.
And the Asian spider that's adding an early element of spooky to parts of Georgia.
They were first identified in 2013 in Georgia. They weren't anywhere else in the United States. And then each year they've sort of been spreading to different counties. This year, for reasons that scientists are still trying to figure out, they've exploded across North Georgia.
Cameron McWhirter at the Wall Street Journal on Halloween's early arrival thanks to Joro spiders. Well, workers who are quitting their jobs in the Great Resignation are discovering that the normal rules don't apply equally. Carla Miller, work advice columnist at the Washington Post, has some of the lessons they've learned from these extraordinary times. Carla, what are you hearing?
What I'm hearing, and this is hundreds of people emailing me and commenting on the column online, they're talking about how during the pandemic, they kind of hit a wall with their jobs. Either they were concerned about their health, or the jobs just reached the point where the demands were increasing on them, but they were not getting any kind of help or support, or they were being asked to change how they were working. And when they worked through the pandemic, they're working remotely and that worked fine, but now they're being called back to the office. Just a number of reasons that pushed them to the point where they decided, you know what, this job isn't worth it to me. It's taking a toll on my physical or my mental health. It doesn't fit with the life I want to lead. And so I'm going to opt out of this job and find something else.
How about the guy you spoke to from Maine who was the forklift operator? I mean, I kept reading his anecdote thinking, okay, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. It never got better.
It never got better.
Explain
no.
the story.
This is real Upton Sinclair stuff here. It's really the jungle. So he had taken a job as a forklift operator for a company and was happy with it for the first year. He said he had nothing bad to say about the job. But then, and this was at the beginning of the pandemic, of course, you're happy to have a job when so many people are losing theirs. But after a while, the pressures were mounting. This summer, temperatures in the warehouse were just over 130 degrees, oh. And he couldn't handle it. And people were getting heat exhaustion. They weren't able to keep up with quotas. And of course, if you don't keep up with the quotas, you get written up. And he actually, this didn't make it into the column, but he told me that he went to his boss to say, hey, we got heat exhaustion. We need some solutions. And the boss said, I was a Marine in Iraq. I'm not too sympathetic with people complaining about the heat. He ended up with heat stroke, had to go to the hospital and called off work and was suspended for a couple days because he called off of work because he was in the hospital. But that wasn't the final straw. The final straw for him was when they had been working 60, 72 hour weeks, mandatory overtime. And they were told it's going to be over soon. End of August, things are going to lighten up. At the end of August, the company ended up laying off people and the mandatory overtime continued. The demands on the people who didn't get laid off increased. And that was the point where this guy decided he was done. He quit. And so he is working gig jobs now and leading a much, he doesn't have the steady 9-to-5, but his quality of life has much improved. He said he and his girlfriend are living on the cheap. They're job hopping, they're doing gig work, but just in terms of their mental and emotional health, they're doing so much better.
We're speaking with Carla Miller, work advice columnist at the Washington Post. She's got a terrific story running. And the title of it is These Workers Quit Their Jobs and Found Better Ones. Here's what they discovered. So you reference it there. There are circumstances, maybe a lot of them now, where hiring managers are overlooking job hopping.
Yes. In past, traditionally, especially with office jobs, we're told don't do too much job hopping. Don't have gaps in your resume that you can't explain. It's all got to go into this nice, neatly packaged narrative of how I got into this career and where I envision myself going in my career, and it, like a nice, steady, consistent path. But during the pandemic, obviously with people getting laid off or people having to leave their jobs to take care of family because of COVID concerns or just any other circumstances, that is not quite as much of a concern for hiring managers from what I'm hearing.
Wow.
And again, that's just for now. 2020, 2021, I think this is a period where they will look at your resume and say, oh, it was during the pandemic. Yes, okay, understandable. At some point, things are going to settle down. People are going to get into steadier jobs, and employers will want to see more consistency. But right now, I think the rules don't apply.
Thanks, Carla. Carla Miller, work advice columnist at The Washington Post. Coming up next, movie delays.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you. And to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Thanks for being with us. The Disney Company is pushing back the release dates of many of its upcoming titles, including the untitled Indiana Jones movie and the Black Panther sequel called Wakanda Forever. Why is this happening, and is this a new trend? Analysis from Dr. Andrew Draper, who's on staff at the Meadows School of the Arts at Southern Methodist University. Andy, explain the basics.
So basically, all of their 2022 releases are being moved back about 2 to 4 months, depending on the property. And the kind of bigger announcement is that Indiana Jones 5 is being moved back the whole year to July 2023.
And what's behind all this? What's happening?
It mostly just has to do with production delays and finding what the best dates are for a lot of these movies. There's only a few kind of hot dates, you know, the summer, blockbuster season, some other holidays throughout the year. So they're trying to hit all these hot spots.
All right, is this a standard thing? I feel like this is making big news for Disney.
It's usually pretty normal to shuffle a little bit. Shuffling their entire slate is kind of new, but you never know what's going to happen within the film industry. And like I said, production delays have had a big part in that.
Yeah. Does this have anything to do with, you know, films not only being released in theaters now, but streaming simultaneously when they're released?
That's still really kind of experimental. We're seeing a lot of success with the hybrid model, but it's still being tested. We still don't know what kind of the best release is with that. It doesn't seem like Disney is going to do any more of those hybrid releases with their really big properties like Marvel. Okay. But they'll probably still do it with some their smaller properties.
All right. So is there a risk then with delays like this that we may stop going to theaters like we did during the pandemic?
I don't really think so. Not with, at least with the superhero properties. People always seem to come out for those. These are characters people know and love or are very familiar with. And no matter when they come out, people are going to leave their house to see these.
We're speaking with Dr. Andrew Draper. He's on staff at the Meadows School of the Arts at SMU. Also co-host of a podcast called Off Script Film Review. And we're talking about the movie delay announcements from Walt Disney Company. So we referenced it earlier, kind of this hybrid release you talked about. Halloween Kills did well. So what about this as a future model?
Well, it's definitely an argument for the hybrid model that you can do it on both platforms at home and in theater and still make a lot of money. And we know that Black Widow, Disney's Black Widow, also did really well at home. It seems to kind of hurt the long-term box office returns, but you know, you turn around and you're making that money on streaming. So it's still, like I said, it's very experimental. The theaters haven't decided one way or another. It really kind of depends on on the property whether or not to do a hybrid release.
All right. So, you know, 18 months roughly after the outbreak of the pandemic, give us kind of today's assessment, if you would, of theaters. How do you see them? Are they fine? Are they in trouble? Do they need a new tweak to get us to go? What's your perception?
They're doing better. People will definitely come out for properties, for movies they really want to see. They will come out. Right now, that's mostly things that are very familiar, like superhero movies or horror. Horror has been doing very well during this time. What's struggling are original films or kind of films aimed at older audiences. Things like Top Gun Maverick and Mission Impossible were pushed about 6 months forward to just try to get just better circumstances for older adults to come out. So theaters are definitely doing better, but it's still a struggle.
Thanks, Andy. Dr. Andrew Draper at the Meadows School of the Arts at SMU. Coming up next, the invasion of the Juro spiders.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Well, Halloween has come early to Georgia this year thanks to an invasion of enormous spiders from Asia. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
If some yards in Georgia seem a little extra spooky this Halloween, there's a good reason. They're getting a little extra help from a creature making its own spider webs, the Juro spider. As Cameron McWhorter tells us, their population has exploded recently. Cameron, what do these spiders look like?
They are, first of all, they're huge. So that's one issue. But secondly, they're bright red and yellow, and they have sort of blue, dark blue, and black striping. They're very unique. You know, I've lived in the South for a long time, so we're used to creepy crawlies down here, and these things are shocking everyone.
Do we know where they came from?
Yes, they came from Asia. They're a spider that's native to Korea and Japan, China. And so they think that they came over on like a cargo pallet or something, probably through the Savannah port.
Are the spiders threatening in any way to people or to other plants?
Good question, and no one knows the answer. Scientists are just starting to try to sort of figure out what the impact these creatures may have on our environment and on other species. Nobody really knows. They showed up, they were first identified in 2013 in Georgia. They weren't anywhere else in the United States. And then each year they've sort of been spreading to different counties. This year, for reasons that scientists are still trying to figure out, they've exploded across North Georgia. And there's been sightings in Tennessee. They are in South Carolina. And there's been a credible sighting in North Carolina.
Cameron, do they expect them to move even farther north or west?
Yes. Yes. If you live north of the Mason-Dixon, you can expect these things to start showing up in all likelihood, because the weather in northern China and in Japan is very similar to, you know, places like Ohio or New York. So these creatures likely will head north. They're very noticeable. You'll know them right away when you see them, because they build these enormous sort of yellow-tinged multidimensional webs, and then they sit in the middle, and they're this giant colorful spider in the middle of it.
We're speaking with Cameron McWhorter of the Wall Street Journal. Do we know if other creatures, bugs, animals eat them and can do something about them?
That's a great question. There have been wasps that apparently are gathering them, but whether that's going to be the wasps are going to eat enough of these spiders is totally unclear. And maybe, you know, maybe these spiders will just become part of the ecosystem. We are seeing a lot of invasive species that sort of show up. I mean, the South has kudzu, we have fire ants, we have the stink bugs. I think you have those up north too. So this is just sort of part of how the world is becoming more and more interconnected. So maybe the impact will be minor. Scientists really just don't know. As we are speaking, I'm in my backyard, and I'm staring up above me in the trees at a giant Juro spider. So these things really, and this is the first year we've seen these things, at least in my neighborhood. So they are really just sort of taking over.
Cameron, what are homeowners doing about them, if anything?
Well, there's all kinds of discussion groups on the various social media platforms, gardening groups in Georgia. Gardening is a big thing down here, obviously. And there's a lot of discussion on how to kill them. Should you kill them? What's the best way to kill them? There's a lot of debate over whether they can catch hummingbirds in their giant webs. People are using hornet spray, hornet poison. People are using brooms. I interviewed a woman who knocks the spiders down with a broom and a long broom, and then has her 2-year-old daughter in rubber boots step on them. So that's because she's too freaked out by the spiders to do it herself.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhorter with this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. No matter what kind of wireless plan you have from any of the big wireless providers, they've all got one thing in common: the catch. The part where too good to be true has too many extra charges to be worth it. But Mint Mobile figured it out. They offer premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. What's the catch? There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is they only sell wireless service online. No retail overhead saves them and you a lot of money. You can also keep your number and your phone, no losing your existing contacts, and get unlimited talk, text, and high-speed data on the nation's largest 5G network, again, for as low as $15 a month. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/Gordon. That's mintmobile.com/Gordon. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka coming up this half hour. What a future smart city would look like. Also, why you want to consider refinancing your mortgage quickly. Plus, the incredible disappearing hotel breakfast and other amenities travelers miss, and how a rock star reclaimed his stolen favorite guitar. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, Qualcomm had a smart city event recently where participants talked about the operational and financial advantages that those living or working in a smart city would enjoy. Tech analyst Rob Enderle of the Enderle Group says smart cities are coming, though most will likely be done poorly at first and need to be redone due to the lack of city and state expertise in smart technology. Rob, what exactly are they?
Well, a smart city is a city that adapts to its population as opposed to the other way around. Our experience is with pretty much dumb cities, stoplights that have no idea how many cars are lined up, don't sequence. That's been changing in some cities over the last few decades, and that's the beginning of smart. But the smarter the city, the better able it is to optimize its limited resources directly to the benefit of its population. And so it can do things like make sure that first responders are close to areas that are likely to have problems, as opposed to trying to get equal coverage throughout the city. A smart city does things like help companies schedule a shift so that you don't have congestion twice a day. You have relatively even traffic throughout the day. And services like trash and electricity and power are adjusted dynamically based on load and need. And so the city can therefore do a lot more with a lot less. It's heavily monitored. The population is instrumented, and the city management is able then to, use 100% of their resources, 100% effectively, 100% of the time. Now that's the goal. We're nowhere near that now. The first smart city effort that I saw that I was originally briefed on was Walt Disney's Epcot, his city of tomorrow, that was developed out of the the World's Fair. And the, sadly, though, he died before it was completed, and Epcot became an amusement park. But his goal was to design a city that was optimized. He used a hub and spoke design, but where transport, package transport, people transport, and much of the city was highly automated. And this was something that was done, at least conceived, between the 50s and 60s when he was in his prime. And so it showcases how far back the concept goes.
Yeah. So does this take an enormous investment on the part of a city?
It does. Qualcomm, the event that I was talking about in the column, had a presentation on it, was arguing that every city needs a CTO so they can better manage their electronic resources. I mean, at the very least, cities have been hit by things like ransomware and malware over the years, and so having a CTO makes a certain amount of sense just to protect the city from those kinds of incursions. But they were arguing that you need that CTO to be able to redesign the city over time so that it becomes more efficient, and so that the monitoring is done intelligently and not in a way that just violates people's privacy or focuses on law enforcement, but actually helps people have a better, safer life.
Yeah. We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. He's written a piece for TechNewsWorld.com. That's about the future smart city. Would it just be cities, just major metropolitan areas?
Well, cities have the budget to do this kind of an effort. But yes, over time, it would migrate down to smaller and smaller municipalities as the cost of doing this gets cheaper. And clearly, parts of this can be implemented on a relatively small scale of monitoring a trash pickup, for instance. I mean, to give you an idea, we all pay for trash pickup largely based on bin size. But some of us have more trash, some of us have less trash, and we probably should be billed based on the trash we generate. And that would have a positive impact, because then you'd be motivated to reduce your trash output to reduce your overall bill. And of course, that fits in with an overall sustainability effort and lowers the loading on landfills and reduces problems like oceanborne plastics.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal analyst and founder of the Enderle Group. Coming up next, considering a mortgage refinance. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now, there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked, or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds, and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Have you considered refinancing your mortgage? Mortgage rates have recently moved higher following indications the Federal Reserve will soon start dialing back bond purchases and could be poised for further increases in the months ahead. A primer from Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. Greg, help us out.
Well, mortgage rates have started to move up. The Federal Reserve is talking about tapering back their bond purchases. These bond purchases they've been making every month since the outbreak of the pandemic has been one of the things that's really helped keep mortgage rates really low. Now that the economy is doing better, they're going to start winding that down. They may start as soon as next month. And because of that, we're already seeing mortgage rates start to move up. You couple that with where inflation is at right now, the likelihood is mortgage rates more likely to go up than go down. So if you haven't refinanced, I think there's a real urgency to do so. Those rates that we've seen for much of the last year and a half, we're not likely to see those lows again.
How about the rules of thumb, generally speaking, when it comes to whether or not it makes sense for you to refinance a mortgage?
Well, if you've had your mortgage prior to the pandemic, then it makes sense to look into it. And the reason for that is we saw mortgage rates drop to never before seen lows And they stayed there for more than a year. So, you know, a lot of people, I think, would be surprised if you've had your mortgage since, you know, before March of 2020, say, there's a good chance you're paying a rate that's a good bit higher than what you could get now, and the refinancing will make sense. But you have to identify what your goal is going to be here. I mean, is it reducing your interest rate to cut your monthly payments? Are you instead looking at maybe reducing the length of your loan, cutting down to, say, a 15-year loan, getting that lower rate and paying off the loan sooner? Or are you looking to tap your equity for home improvements? In any of those cases, rates are really low and conducive to doing that now, but I'd act sooner rather than later.
We're speaking with Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. We're talking about refinancing your mortgage sooner rather than later, given that rates appear to be inching higher. How about the time and money involved with a refinance?
And this is, you know, I think speaks to some of the objections that people have. I mean, we had found just a couple months ago, only about 1 in 5 homeowners had refinanced their mortgage. Of those that had a mortgage prior to the pandemic, only about 1 in 5 had done so. And about half of mortgage holders hadn't even thought about refinancing. And a lot of the objections people have revolve around things like closing costs and fees, the paperwork, the hassle. But, you know, you've got to put this in the context of, you know, what you can potentially save. If you can cut your payment by 100, 150 or 200 bucks a month, you know, that frees up valuable breathing room in your household budget at a time when the cost of so many other things is on the rise.
Thanks, Greg. Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. Coming up next, hotel amenities that we're starting to miss. Hey, do you ever feel boxed in by your wardrobe that you have to choose between comfort and style? Well, the founder of Cuts felt that way, so he reinvented the idea of work leisure apparel from the ground up, starting with the basic t-shirt. The result is a shirt stylish enough for the boardroom or the broadcast booth. I love shirts from Cuts. They're the most comfortable, most durable, and the most fashionably flexible. I've worn them with shorts and sandals and also under a suit jacket. And now they've got another innovation. Cuts Always On Joggers are pants designed to never take a day off, even when you do. From working out to eating out, Cuts Always On Joggers fit you and the situation perfectly with comfort that never quits and style that never disappoints. They're the choice of elite athletes like Patrick Mahomes, Damian Lillard, and Bryce Harper. It's not just a lifestyle. It's not just clothing. It's work leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order at cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off your first order. Hey, glad you're with us. 18 months into the pandemic, travelers say they keep encountering misleading and false promises on hotel websites. They complain of finding the elite level lounges, free breakfast, or happy hour receptions with snacks unavailable. Sometimes even when hotels claim that they've been restored. The maddening trend from Scott McCartney, travel columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Scott, what are road warriors telling you?
Yeah, no, they're really frustrated. They're saying they even sometimes they call a hotel, talk to the front desk. Has the restaurant reopened? Yes, the restaurant reopened. So if I'm an elite member and I'm part of my expected perk is a hot breakfast buffet. Yeah, you get it, and then you get there, and they say, oh no, well it's not open on the days you're here.
Wow.
And so there's been a lot of that. Loyalty program lounges that aren't open. Evening receptions are a popular thing at some hotels, and really, I think the big problem here is the lack of communication. It's one thing to say, okay, for the pandemic and cost cutting and all, we're not going to offer that. But be straight with people if you're not going to offer that. And hotels have not done that. Brands that are known for free breakfast continue to say free breakfast. And when you get there, there may not be breakfast, or it may be grab and go instead of the hot buffet you expect. And people are really frustrated. The grab and go is, you know, just a yogurt and a breakfast bar. And it's just not the same amenity.
So is that reflected in, say, a lower room price?
Well, no. And in fact, sometimes it's reflected in a higher room price. I mean, one example a traveler told me about and verified was some Radisson hotels are selling business class rooms at higher rates. They're standard rooms, but they typically come with free breakfast, and the standard room does not. And so you pay more. When I looked in, you know, next few days, it was $5 more. If you booked further out, it was as much as $125 more. And so there was a particular hotel near O'Hare Airport that I called, talked to the front desk, and they said, well, the restaurant's closed, so there is no hot breakfast for business class rooms. Everyone gets a grab-and-go bag. And so whether you booked a standard room or a business class room, you get the same breakfast bag. There's really no other benefit. And yet some people might unsuspectingly pay significantly more for that business class room.
We're speaking with Scott McCartney, travel columnist at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called The Incredible Disappearing Hotel Breakfast and Other Amenities Travelers Miss. Does this come down to what a chain communicates broadly versus what a locally operated hotel might carry out?
Yeah, I actually think it's both. I think that the chains are miscommunicating to people by continuing to sell perks that they're not delivering. And the individual hotels, and it's interesting because at almost any chain brand, you can drill down into the individual hotel. You can get pictures of the pool and the reception area and directions and local attractions and all kinds of information about that particular property. And on those pages, it will say, now there may be a disclaimer at the top, you know, during the pandemic, some things may not be available. But you drill down and it continues to say, complimentary hot breakfast buffet. Oh, wow. You know, and so nobody has changed it, and I think that's horrible for travelers. It's horrible for the brands. If you want your website and your app to be accurate, useful sources of information, you got to update them. And we've had 18 months of pandemic. There has been plenty of time to update them, and they haven't.
Thanks, Scott. Scott McCartney, travel columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, a rock star reconnects with a long-lost guitar.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like you're going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. But to cruise through challenges, you need someone who's right there with you. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice you need to get past whatever's in front of you and get where you want to go. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees, ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Well, we'll finish with this. Back in 1976, Randy Bachman lost his favorite guitar, a 1957 Gretsch. It's the guitar he used to write several hit songs with when he founded the band The Guess Who. The Washington Post says the instrument was so precious to Mr. Bachman that whenever he would travel with it, he used heavy-duty chains to fasten the encased guitar to the toilet in his hotel room. To steal it, you'd also have to get the toilet. But the guitar was stolen when he left it with a trusted road manager while he was recording for Bachman Turner Overdrive, which did the song Taking Care of Business. In the years that followed, he searched tirelessly for the guitar. But nearly 45 years after it vanished, an internet sleuth tracked it down after an enormous effort. He found it in Tokyo in the hands of a Japanese musician who goes by the name Takeshi. Mr. Bachman and Takeshi agreed to an exchange. Once pandemic restrictions are lifted, Mr. Bachman will travel to Tokyo and swap guitars in person with Takeshi and reclaim his original. It's not clear how it wound up in Japan.
That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.